Mr. Boulez, in the conversation that we had before this program, you mentioned that the kind of music you write now doesn't depend upon the memory of the listener. How can a listener turn his memory off? All the music that we've heard in prior ages depends upon memory. What do you substitute for this faculty?
I think, evidently, that the music now is not no more a question of memory as it was understood in the centuries before. The music became, if I can give the historical point of view before, the music became more and more asymmetrical. You see, for instance, in Bach or Mozart or Beethoven, you have repetitions which are specifically here to help the listener to understand the music which comes in having the souvenir of he has already heard. More and more, the developments in Beethoven, the last Beethoven, for instance, with Wagner and his idea of the infinite mm-hmm. Melody, you have this sense stronger and stronger because he wants a continuity in the future, always. Would be always projected in the future of the music.
What about the leitmotif?
Mr. Embry, what about the leitmotif?
Yes, but the leitmotif is another kind of thing, you see, I mean, in the great parts of Wagner, you have this kind of projection in the future, but you have basis, and the leitmotif are not typically in structural in Wagner. They are more dramatic than structural point of view. So in Schoenberg, you have this point of view developed and more and more in Debussy also. I mean, in the late works by Debussy, you have such a construction that you cannot have a total view of the piece. It's comparable to with the architecture, for instance. With the classical architecture, you have points of symmetry. So if you want a point, if you want to see a point, you have the other points in the eye too, even if you don't look to that. So in the music also, you add this kind of thing. In the modern music, you have development which are not really involved by themselves. Maybe I am not very clear because the words are very difficult for me in English, but in Debussy, I mean, the developments are not entirely supposed by the beginning. You see,
they're not thematic or not motivic?
Yes, they are more or less motivic or thematic, but you can have surprise in it, mm-hmm. in change of tempo, and in change of all the things we make development. So, and in Webern, the works by Webern, this it's brought to the most important point. Maybe the late Webern is less audacious than the first Webern in this sense. The first Webern works are totally in this sense. So you cannot, you see, it's in perpetually change. And I think it's new for European people, but I think there is a strong tradition in Far East Oriental music in this kind of things. Maybe it's related in the Far East with the improvisation. In a certain kind of development, but they are not based on the memory first. They are based on the instantaneous feeling.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me also, Mr. Boulez, that what you're describing could be summed up by saying there's the slow elimination of the theme as object.
Yes, exactly. It's not only a question of feeling and of sensation, but it's also a question of technique. I mean, we have eliminated the theme in itself. The theme, I take an example, the theme was a sum of things related with each other, but related first. You see, you have the rhythm related with the notes and with a certain dynamics and so on. And with a figure very closed on itself, so susceptible of developments, but very closed nevertheless. In the modern music, you have more than a theme, you have a kind of possibilities of development. That is the difference.
Makes me think of what Schlosser calls un procès de devenir.
Yes, exactly.
A process of becoming.
Yes, exactly.
This is Dr. Elst.
Yes. Yes. No, I think we are not no more related with all the things related with themselves. We are more related with a network of possibilities we choose before, but we have the choice is not at the beginning, the choice is at the end of the work. I mean, maybe it's related with the philosophy of our times also, that in French, you see, I can explain, I don't know the words in English, but it's the existence who creates the essence and not vice versa.
Uh-huh.
You see, it's the philosophy of Sartre and what is the man in Germany?
Heidegger,
yes.
Several of us had been wondering whether there was this philosophical background to this kind of music. I can see your interest in the moment, in the instantaneous, in process, in something that is unmechanical,
yes,
in its essence. And when you draw the relation to the music, to certain musics of the Far East and Near East, another point comes to my mind. Most of these musics are very continuous, they are very instantaneous, there's much interest in the tone color, in the moment of tone, and they are also, in the last analysis, very, very static. Nothing really happens. The
for
music
us,
starts
for
and
us.
It continues,
yes.
And it stops. Now, from your point of view, is this a value in Western terms? We think of in somewhat dramatic terms, beginning, middle, climax, conclusion.
Yes, I am sure that we cannot. You see, it would be wrong if we apply exactly the kind of thought of the Far East to the Western mind, because the Western tradition we cannot avoid. It's strong, and it has its advantages. I mean. So we have always considered, maybe it's a question of thinking of the art generally, and especially of the art of the time. Maybe the Western are less patient than the Eastern people. So they consider the art like a swimming pool, you see, and they are in a bath of music, and they can rest in music, you see. So we are always fond of an event, and we like the event begins, but we like the end also of the event,
mm-hmm.
because we cannot be relaxed in the event. We are always fond against or with, but we are not with. I mean, we are not within the event. Our Western.
Yes, I see what you mean. In relation to the
so
the Far East.
We have to take care of that, and in writing a work, we must be careful with this fact of beginning and ending. So you see, if I took the comparison with Eastern music, is not for the exactitude of the comparison, but
yes.
It's just for this development of the instant.
Mm-hmm.
I mean. So you see, for instance, the rhythmic point of view of the Eastern, has been much far developed at our rhythmic point of view until now. And this is the reason for what...
I have a little difficulty reconciling two things. You talk about the instant on one hand, and you talk about development on the other. Now, I find that these terms seem mutually, to some extent, exclusive to me. How can you talk about a series of instants and then talk about development? Because development presupposes memory. Development presupposes origin and movement from one point to another, one can intellectually and emotionally...
For my opinion, you have a narrow idea of the development. Too narrow for me.
No, but how how can a thing develop in simply a series of instants in which one has no memory of the previous instant? Then how is one aware of the development if one has no memory of what has happened before?
Yes, you can have, because the development is not a question of going from a point to another, you see. You can, in the new kind of development, you can stop at every point, and every point is important. There are no bridges, I mean. There are no arcs.
The process. You talk about process.
Yes.
How can a process take place unless one is aware of the point of origin and aware of a sense of direction? A process implies movement. It implies growth. Now,
yes.
If you are
no growth, I don't like the
well,
word
development
growth.
is a synonym for growth.
No, I don't.
Well, then
think
you
so.
Have two definitions of development. I think here. I think you are meaning development in the sense of process or simply change.
Yes.
Or flux.
Yes.
And he is meaning development in the classical sense.
Yes, exactly.
Which is development of something.
From certain premises.
Yes,
from
certain premises to a climax.
Yes.
You see, you are thinking of that, but I am not thinking like that.
Well,
I am thinking.
What would you say was the aesthetic difference between the kind of music that is produced in the Far East or the kind of music you write, on the one hand, and let's say a very eclectic piece which borrows styles from right and left without any attempts to reconcile them. In other words, supposing you had a piece which, for 5 seconds, sounded exactly like Beethoven, and for 5 seconds, sounded exactly like Tchaikovsky, and for another 5 seconds, sounded like Pierre Boulez. Why wouldn't this be equally satisfactory?
No, because you have to be united in style also, you see.
But why?
It's not a question... No, because it's a you expose in this moment a kind of surrealistic point of view, see, like they make collage, but the collage in the painting are the weakest thing in the surrealist...
Without memory, this should make no difference.
Oh, yes.
You have change. You
no,
have
no.
Flux.
I mean, you see, you have misunderstood me on the question of memory.
Mm-hmm.
You see, you take memory as absolutely no... you can... How do you... I can
no
say.
Recollection, do you mean? Or
yes, no recollection at all. Yes, you can... even if you have strong points, you see, you can memorize a point. But I mean, the memory is not the thing important like in the thematic thing, you see. For having, understanding a development with a thematic point of view, you have to memorize the theme and understand what happens with that. But for modern approach, the comprehension is in another sense. I mean, you cannot memorize a theme because there are no theme. So you have to memorize other things. I mean, the memory is a structural point of view. I mean, you see, for instance...
You don't have to memorize the tone roll.
No, not at all. It was a folly. It would be foolish.
I wonder if you could say it this way, that the theme always was a static element, a constant, and that the memory was simply to identify or to orient oneself within this framework of the piece.
Yes, exactly.
And that this type of memory in which you say, there it is again.
Yes.
This has ceased to be.
Yes,
that
yes.
The kind of memory you need now is to discover the continuity of a process.
Yes, exactly, exactly. Yes.
This Mr. Holloway, you haven't said a word.
Well,
yet.
I've been waiting. Well, this gets directly to the point of, I think you used the word serialization in music. Now, this is the memory, then, is it not? The serial concept of recurring pattern.
No, you see, you have not to memorize patterns or rows. because the rows are so complex, you have not to memorize the row. It would be madness, complete madness. But I mean, if you have a kind of development, and you have another kind of development, you can saisir, grasp, yes, the resemblance between the two. But it's not a question of memorizing a theme, you see. It's just an approach to the same kind of structure. So the memory is, the role of the memory, the part of the memory, is completely different than in the other music.
Well, I understand that.
Excuse me.
Well, one thing I think maybe we'd better clarify right here.
No, Mr. Holloway.
For the benefit of someone who might be listening, and that is that we are talking about music that has no literal repetition. Now, isn't that,
that's,
we all agree
yes,
to that?
Yes,
we're now talking
yes,
about
that is
music.
The first point.
Yeah, well, yeah. And this wasn't clearly stated, and I think we should make this very clear, that we are talking about new music, new concepts in music, where there is no literal repetition and no thematic thing to hang your hat on, so to speak.
Yes,
exactly.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
I wanted to make that clear.
Yes.
I have forgotten actually the original point I wanted to make, but I would like to say that this process of development which you have referred to, isn't this now an idea of extensibility, namely of drawing out a work to a given length, not based on symmetries or on climax or on destiny,
yes,
but rather on the choice of possibilities.
Yes, exactly.
And that you may stop whenever you so wish.
Yes, exactly.
Because all you are attempting to do is to explore a number of given choices that
yes.
you yourself make.
Yes, you are quite right. And you see, I give you examples of the more recent works which have been written either by Stockhausen or by me or by Pusser. And we try to make an approach in this sense that the work, even closed, can be cut, not in any point, but in certain points. So you have in the works the direction the listener can choose his direction of listening or cutting the work. And the work has to be not destroyed by this fact, you see. And in the work, by instance, in the classical works, you have four or three movements homogeneous. So now, in our music, we try to have all a piece entirely, but you can make the cuts yourself, and the time is no more homogeneous for each movement. I mean, you have not an allegro or adagio, but all the categories are broken and can fade out each in other, you see.
I would like to make an analogy here. I hope it's not too far-fetched. Namely, if you can recall an Indian frieze of architecture with all these writhing forms over a vast surface, here again, there is no beginning and end.
Yes.
Your eye travels to whichever point interests you.
Yes.
Every part is somewhat differentiated and yet forms a continuous, a continuum, so to speak.
Yes.
You might say, I don't want to walk around this whole building. I don't have to. I can stop anywhere I wish.
Yes,
it's
yes.
This idea of extensibility.
Yes, exactly. And I think
which is, again, then an Oriental idea.
Yes, yes. And it's a very rich idea because you have not a structure defined before the listener comes. The structure is defined by the listener itself. And it is very important. You offer him a possibility of structure, and he chooses his own possibility, and another listener can choose another kind of possibilities.
Well, what would make the listener? What would make the listener decide how to cut? What motivation would he have deciding to cut or not to cut?
It's just a feeling of the moment. I don't mean that he can cut every place in the music.
Understand.
But at you see, if he wants to hear a long part, he can hear a long part. And if he wants to start maybe by a fast development or by a very mixed development, he can begin by that development and reach to a point of rest, you see. So he can choose himself his way of listening the work.
In other words, you as a composer present a number of choices here.
Yes.
And the listener then can more or less put together those sections which he wishes to hear.
Yes, exactly.
Each one self-contained.
He becomes a composer then, doesn't he? The listener.
More or less, yes, he composes with a composer. So.
Mr. Boulez, I have a tremendous objection here. Let me say that I go over to San Francisco and I hear these beautiful foghorns.
Yeah.
I project an organization into these random sounds which I hear.
Yeah.
From your discussion of what you mean by development, it appears to me that you're even willing, and this appears to be the situation, that what you are presenting in your music is random sound. Which has more, it continues, but it is random sound into which I project some kind of organization. Is this just unorganized sound?
Oh, no.
All right, then how is it organized?
How is it organized?
Yes.
Because you have built up all the construction, and you see, you have, it's like a kind of labyrinth.
Can I hear this?
Oh, yes, of course, you can hear. You see, I mean, comparatively to the literature, it's a little bit like Finnegan's Wake.
James Joyce.
James Joyce, for me, is a very good example of...
Yes, but in that book there is exact and continuous
repetition. Yes, but you can read from...
There are concepts. H.C. Earwicker.
Yes, but we have also a concept in the structure of the music. We don't let the things happening, you see.
I think it would be good if you could give us some indication now of what is structural that we can hear in this kind of music, the kind of music you write, Stockhausen, and
you can hear the cycles of development.
Hear recurrences?
No, I don't mean the
patterns.
Recurrences.
It's parentheses. He sets up a pattern.
Yes.
And you hear this through a certain, a continually growing thing based upon a definite preconceived notion on his part.
Yes, exactly, because you see, in the series, you have plenty of possibilities. And for development or for a kind of extension or extensibility, and you have said, you choose certain possibilities, are not other. You see, and this is sufficient, but necessary, but sufficient for close square of possibilities, and you have in this way a figure determinate.
All right, let's try again. A little more.
I make just an observation. I'm not going to question you, but it seems to me that what you have said is that there are many possibilities. You do not feel the compulsion to choose some and to reject others. You would prefer to present all possibilities and let the listener choose.
No. For development, I choose myself the possibilities.
Yeah. Yes, but no, you said that the possibilities were not necessary, but possible. That you could make a construction out of certain possibilities and not others, but that you could equally well include other possibilities as well.
Well, this would be true of Beethoven's sonata too. He develops what he chooses to develop and leaves.
No, but where I feel the difference is that he has, to some extent, eliminated this choice on the composer's part and left it to the listener, because the listener can include more or less.
But I think
as he chooses.
I think it's exactly like the listener has a choice of listening to whatever piece of music he wishes to listen to by any composer. If you feel the desire to listen to something, you play it or listen to it, and he is giving you the same choice.
Yes,
exactly. And also, he is setting limitations for himself, exactly like any of us set limitations for ourselves when we write a piece, exactly in the same way. mean, it's a process of setting limitations.
Yes, yes.
I wonder whether by your expression square, do you think of the word cadre?
No.
Framework?
I have used square only for, you see, giving a closed view.
That's the limitation.
And I'll give you, two examples in my work, you see.
Yes.
I have written, for instance, a book for string quartet, and there are six movements, but the six movements are not to be played in each time, in a succession. So you have the first movement is broken in two parts, one A and one B. The second movement is all. The third movement is in three parts, and etc. etc. And you can choose, you see, everything you want. You can just play 1A if you want. But as a matter of fact, you have movement 1 and movement 6, which are related, I mean. So you can play 1A and 6B, instance. And you can make the choose yourself as you want to hear. And in the same, and this is deliberately separate, you see. But I can give you an example, more recent in the Marteau sans maître. You have three cycles of pieces, and I have ordered myself the order. You have the piece 1, the piece 3, and the piece 7, who are related with themselves. Mm-hmm. And you have piece 2, piece 4, 6, and 8, who are related also. And you have piece 5 and the beginning of piece 9, which are related. And the end of piece 9 is related with all the cycles. So you see, I broken the cycles, and myself, I have ordered the way to go, mm-hmm. you see? But you can reconstitute, if you want, the piece 1, 3 and 7, you can hear at the, you see, after each other, and you have the cycle in its integrity.
Could you give us some indication of what kind of relationships exist between these movements? They are not going to be motivic or thematic.
No, I think they are based on principles completely different, rhythmic principles, rose principles also. For instance, the piece 1, 3, and 7 are based uniquely on harmonic rows of chords. Mm-hmm. And the instrumentation is based uniquely on percussion instrument. I mean, like vibraphone, guitar, xylophone, you see, uniquely that. And so, and the center is based, in the contrary, on the flute part and the voice part. So, with all the characteristic, you can have a cycle typical of it's a network of possibilities, you see. And in the other pieces, for instance, the second and so on, you have another kind of possibilities based on the interference of rhythmic and rows, you see. At only in this piece you can find this kind of possibilities, and it gives you a kind of a type of music quite different, you see, even in the, if the way of developing is not the same, but you you use such possibilities very different, so the two cycles cannot be confounded.
May I ask you, while we're
Mr.
on
Embry.
The subject, I was wondering if you could explain a little bit to us how you serialize rhythms. This is something that we started to talk about the other evening, and we were none of us quite sure how this was done. Would it be possible to explain this in such a way that our audience could understand it, or is this too technical a subject?
It's very technical, I mean, but I can just take a comparison. You see, you have, with the notes, you have tone rows with one note, you see, 12 notes, but note by note, and the density does not change at all. And you have also, I have made myself a ton of rows of chords, so you have density constantly changing.
Are these in the chord row. Rows made derived from the tone rows in the manner that Schoenberg would have done?
Oh yes, but it's more complex and I think more developed in the sense of not You see, the rows of Schoenberg are only transposed, I mean, semitone by semitone, while my rows are transposed in a structural way already. But it's too, you see, it's too difficult to explain. But nevertheless, the row construction itself is in itself structural already. And so you have these types of row different for the notes, for the pitches. And for the durations, and I think the durations is a word more appropriate to this thing than the rhythm. Because the rhythm is already is a combination of durations already. So you can have for the rhythm a row of durations, single durations, I mean, but not, you see, you must think in way of geometric progression and not arithmetic progression, because the rhythm is felt in geometrical progression. The classical example is, you see, the classical way of beating is from dividing 2 by 2 each time, so it's a geometrical progression. And the rhythm is felt like that, and so you have to take care of that and not to have a like semitones of durations, I mean.
Well, for instance, could you give us an example of a rhythm, of a row of durations? Let's say, what would the first three notes of such a row be like? Would you have an eighth note, and then a dotted eighth note, and or
yes, you can, yes, like, you can have a kind of durations.
When you say that it's it's a geometrical progression, would you mean that you would avoid, for example, having a row consisting of an eighth note followed by a quarter note followed by a half note?
No, you can have that, but I mean, you must take care that the rhythm, the durations, cannot be added.
To create what?
You have to take care that for having a rhythm which is possible to hear very clearly, you have to take care of this geometrical progression is the basis of that.
See, the whole tendency, I think, if I'm not mistaken, is to differentiate the rhythm in the same way that one differentiates the pitch.
Yes, exactly. You have two kind of things. You have, maybe you can have a progression arithmetical, but you can have ranges of rhythm. So if you multiply by two, like the octavas, I mean.
Yeah.
You see, you have a basic row, but you must be careful to don't use not only the basic row with a little interval. It would be like if you play all the things between an octava, you see. Mm-hmm. It's a very poor definition of the row. So you have to multiply the rhythm by octavas, like the pitch. So
augmentation
of diminution,
yes, yes.
And you have all the kind of diminution and
all the permutations.
Yes, yes.
Well, is this correct that instead of hearing a pulsation,
yes,
in the old sense, that you now hear over a large span a rhythmic development of ideas without recurring pulsation?
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Yes,
I mean,
yes,
yes.
Yes, I understand you. No, the process of the duration comes from the multiplication of a little unit.
But so this thing is growing over a span.
Yes, the duration comes from the littlest.
The smallest unit
to the biggest one.
Yes, yes.
And as you have for the pitch, the range of the pitches, you have for the rhythm to multiply. So for having very long durations, it's like if more or less when you have slow tones, you see. Mm-hmm. And when you have very short duration, it's more or less if you have very high tones.
A certain correlation, in other words.
Yeah, there is a correlation.
The
acoustical
yes.
experiences has proved,
yes.
Have proved a relation very established between the pitch, the loudness, and the duration.
Yes.
And it's based on loi de Fechtner rules, laws.
Of course, many listeners, and composers too, I think, are sometimes a little distressed to think that the composer has made so many what we might call preconditions to the composition itself, because obviously these are a priori conditions
yes.
which you set up, and it seems to some, I think, to eliminate the actual imaginative process. Now, I know that this is not the case.
Yes, yes,
but
yes.
I would like, I think our audience would like to hear what philosophical basis or aesthetic basis you have for making these preconditions to a composition. That is, you might say certain rules or operations which to which you are bound or committed even before you write the first note.
That was Dr. Elston.
Yes, but when the composers compose in the habitual style, I mean, there are many. Much preconditioned also, but they don't know because they are preconditioned from the childhood. Childhood, no.
Yeah,
sure. And so this precondition we have maybe seem a little more stronger, because they are new. But nevertheless, each composer has behind itself such a background that he is never free, even in starting the first note. Well,
I agree to this, but I think that this is something that the public must come slowly to.
Yes,
well, you're really saying now then that that this way of composing is a very conscious, rational way of setting limitations, whereas in the old way it was an unconscious.
More or less unconscious, because you have learned in the conservatory the rules of harmony and counterpoint, and the counterpoint is not easy to write. You see, if you write a double canonic fugue, it's very uneasy.
Yes,
even.
Yes,
exactly. So you have
audience uneasy.
And you have two kinds of writing always. You had the kind of writing very severe, and you see each note is defined by a network of possibilities which meet for this note. And you have free writing, which are related with which are less related with this theoretical point of view. And you have a choice in many possibilities.
But it's conditioned by your previous experience, so that's the limitation.
Yes, yes. And for instance, in Bach, you have this canonic writing, and you have the free writing of the recitativo, I mean.
May I ask one question about the actual process of composing? When you are writing a piece, and you have the sum of it written down in the form of notes, note values, the way you want it, do you ever get a strong desire for the music to continue in a certain manner? And then do you try to find a way within your system to make it do what you want, or do you simply obey the system wherever it may lead you? In other words, does your ear ever take over to the point where it insists or it desires very strongly that the music continue to create a sound that you want at that moment?
You see, I think I have not explained myself. I think I have not explained myself on this kind of charts. You see, all the people have talked very, very much about the charts, charts of duration, charts of pitches, and so many charts that one song depends of maybe 20 charts. So it's very difficult to write one sound at this moment. No, for myself, I established the network of possibilities when I need it only. Mm. I have possibilities. I know a certain kind of possibilities. But going through the development of my music, if I need one chart,
what makes between you decide that you need that?
Oh, myself, I need. You see, if
you,
I need,
you feel a necessity for a given sound at a certain point.
Yes, or not a given sound only, but I mean, if I need so stupidly, you see, 1 minute more, I make a statement for 1 minute more. It's very stupid, like I say, but you see,
do you need a certain sound? Do you ever need to have a certain succession of sounds? Does one succession of sounds suggest another to you so strongly that you have to find a way to get it?
I don't think in terms of succession of sounds. I mean, it's more complex than that. You see, if you have written something, it cannot happen necessarily other things. You see, if I have written a succession of sounds, these sounds do not appeal necessarily other sounds. I mean, there are many possibilities each time.
But do you sometimes desire one possibility more than others?
Yes, of course.
You but feel a strong desire for one possibility as
yes,
opposed to...
Yes, and I choose the possibilities yeah. myself, because I am within these possibilities, mm-hmm. I am in each instant free to choose many possibilities. And if I want maybe a F-sharp of vibraphone mm-hmm. in the low pitch, I can find it very easily, mm-hmm. because I have so many possibilities that I can find this F-sharp, and I have to arrange the other possibilities that I can have this F-sharp.
Do you ordinarily work strictly? Have you come to work more strictly or less strictly within your square of possibilities?
Oh, I have always, you see, I don't think in the music in terms of severity or strict approach of the music. Each moment has its necessity. If you have to be strict, you have to be strict, but if you have not to be strict, you have not to be strict, and so it's all.
Did I understand you right when you said that there are moments when all the when the square of possibilities disappears and the tones, pitches, durations, and everything simply comes to your mind?
Yeah.
Are there moments like that?
Yes, but within a certain frame,
yes,
you see.
Yes, always within a certain
yes, exactly.
Frame.
Exactly.
Gentlemen, we have talked for quite a while, and I know you have some more questions, but let's allow this for one or two more questions, and then we shall have to end. Jack, did you have one, Mr. Holloway?
Well, one thing that's been in the back of my mind, that this is on a very common or low plane, let's say. But you spoke earlier of development in the sense of improvisation, and you referred as
yes.
to some kinds of music.
Yes, yes.
And I have to think, as we continue this, in terms of the term they use here, progressive jazz. Now, I know that there is no real exact tie-in, but there is the idea that there is set, predetermined by the performers, that they will do certain things at certain times, and then they embellish that within that framework. And this thing is a continual development without this literal repetition to the
yes,
theme.
Yes, yes. I know. This is, yes, I know the progressive jazz.
Yeah,
I
yeah.
have heard it. It's in a very Palmer way,
yeah,
but it's
yeah.
The same kind of feeling,
yes,
I think.
Yes, that's what I wanted to find
yes,
out, if
yes.
there was that same
exactly,
feeling.
Yes,
yeah.
exactly. And I think all the young composers now feel that very strongly, this kind of necessity of freedom at each instant.
Yes. Uh-huh.
I would like to get onto another plane, if I may, for just a moment, a sort of semi-philosophical plane, because obviously, a musician is a thinker, and I don't
yes.
think that we should ignore this aspect of your art. Now, I don't know whether this is properly attributed to you or not, but I think I have either read or have been told that you made a statement to the effect that the music of our own time should in some way reveal the German word Angst comes to mind, or the anguish, the extreme condition of the contemporary man.
Yeah.
Have you made such a statement?
You see, no, it's not myself who has made this statement. But I think we are in our time, and necessarily we reflect our time if we are, you see, gifted, I mean. You are, not my theory, but my thought of that. If maybe the gifted people, the people able to do something, are just the medium to go, and medium to approach his century, I mean,
yes,
or
his
period.
Well, this is quite understandable.
Maybe, you see, he's quite conscious. But there are many, many things who happen in him unconsciously.
Nice.
And he is only the way...
Instrument?
Yeah, the instrument of all the things which happen, I mean. And he is like an animal with antennas. And so if he has good antennas, yes, exactly. I
well,
think, you see.
To return to that then, do you feel, however, that there is a certain, let's call it, atmosphere of either crisis or desperation which must be expressed in the music of our own time?
Well, I
that there is a certain atmosphere of crisis.
Yes.
Of desperation in our own age, which is the essential function of music today to express.
Well, I mean, you see, for the European, I talk because I know
yes,
much
yes.
the situation of the European. We were, all our youth was during the war. And so we had very bad conditions of growing up. Maybe this has marked us very deeply, I think so. Because all the musicians who have appeared in the same time. We are all of the same age, exactly. Born between 23 or 24 and 28. It's just during 5 years, and the youth were before 1942 and 1946. You see, and all the experience, the more sharp for us in the living, I mean, were in these years. So we cannot avoid this point because we are already marked, we are yet marked
yes.
by these times. And so our music is the image
yes.
of that.
Well, if it's a natural image, and you might say, which comes forth without any dogma, without any polemical point of view, it's perfectly understandable. But am I to understand you don't have any polemic about this? Music does not have to be an expression of angst or of
no,
anxiety
no,
state.
No, no, no.
It simply happens to be a largely this kind of
yes,
sentiment.
Yes, yes.
But it is not as if you said this must be the kind of music.
No, 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 no.
Well, this is
for me. It's
me.
A little
yes.
bit too restrictive if you have only
exactly,
angst.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Gentlemen, perhaps this is a good place to stop. Thank you, Dr. Elston. Thank you, Jack Holloway and Andrew Embry. And thank you, Pierre Boulez, for being with us today.